Secretary, whenever you're ready, you may begin.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court and Counsel, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for public.
Help us keep track of your time.
Thank you. I'm going to be directing my arguments primarily to the Tax Injunction Act this morning because I believe the issues of the 11th Amendment and abstention have been adequately briefed. My own sense is that if we win on the Tax Injunction Act, we should win on the other two. Now, if the Court disagrees, I would certainly take questions, but I'm going to be directing my arguments primarily to the Tax Injunction Act. The Court requested supplemental briefings after the briefs were filed on the recent Wynn case with the United States Supreme Court. Those briefs have been submitted. In this case, what we're dealing with here is a compact called IFTA. It's a federal compact authorized by 49 U.S.C. Section 31701 and SEC.
Can I clarify instead of going through it all? To me, the key question, although I don't know if it's just positive, is does Argue get no money ultimately out of this?
Yes, none. Zero.
Well, let me pursue that a little bit. Let's just look at Oregon and Nebraska, just as an example. Oregon collects, in the common parlance, Nebraska taxes, which it remits to Nebraska.
Correct.
The Tax Injunction Act forbids a court from restraining, among other things, the collection of taxes, but it doesn't say whose. And it seems to me that what you're seeking to do is to have the court restrain Oregon's collection of taxes for Nebraska and Idaho and New York and whoever else. Why doesn't that just fit right? In other words, a state as collection agent for another state, why isn't that good enough if the ultimate thing that's being collected is taxes?
The state tax. That's a very good question. There's two issues here that we have raised and briefed extensively on this, and I would like to address both of them. But before I address that question, I want you to understand that the fallback position or the argument we're really saying is that there is no, quote, a plain, speedy, or efficient remedy, whether or not we are directing our action to state taxes. And, Your Honor, with all due respect, we're not seeking to restrain anything. We're seeking a declaration.
There are a lot of cases that say that doesn't help you. So let's leave that aside.
All right.
Let's assume, I know you don't give up that argument, but let's assume that the remedy that you're seeking would count as restraint under the Tax Injunction Act. Why isn't it enough to have Oregon collect taxes for another state?
It may be, Your Honor.
Okay.
It may be. I mean, that's arguable. Here's what I'm trying to say. If you read the Act, though, it says the district court shall not enjoin, suspend, or restrain the assessment, levy, or collection of any tax under state capital state law.
Law.
Where a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy may be had in the course of such state.
Okay.
Now, if you interpret that literally, and looking at the Wynn case, and I thought about this, of course, as usual, about 2 o'clock yesterday, last night in the morning, looking at the Wynn case, the Wynn case says that there is no absolute, as I indicated in the brief, the Supreme Court said there's no absolute prohibition on challenging state tax systems. It's not absolute. Admittedly, in the Wynn case, what we were talking about was a tax credit in Arizona.
Well, the ultimate result, if they won, was more money for the state and not less. And if you win, the ultimate result is less money for the states whose taxes are involved.
But the phrasing of the statute, which I looked at about 2 in the morning, not really, but...
Pardon me? Sorry.
The phrasing of the statute, it seems to me, does present problems for you because it says under state law, as you say, but it doesn't say which state.
Doesn't say which state.
And then it says where a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy may be had in the courts of such states. So to take Judge Graber's hypothetical, we are... one way to look at what you're doing is enjoining, suspending, or restrain. And I understand the remedy question, and I share your concern, but that's where we are with regard to refunds. That under state law, Nebraska law, in other words, the tax is under Nebraska law, right? And so the question is there a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy which may be had in the courts of such state, i.e. Nebraska?
Well,
And that is what the compact does, right? It sent you to Nebraska.
That's what the ALJ said. Well, let's make sure we're clear on that. You're getting into the second argument. If I can,
No, I want you to answer Judge Berzon's question because I have the same one. Okay. As to the Nebraska tax, if your underlying legal argument were correct, which for the sake of this discussion we assume, could you go to Nebraska and seek a refund?
We could go to Nebraska, Idaho, all 47 states.
Okay, so there's a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy in Nebraska for Nebraska tax.
If all you were looking at was one tax, I would agree with you. But we're looking at 47 taxes.
Now, which looks for your convenience have been consolidated in Oregon.
For their convenience.
And for your convenience, too. I mean, one wonders why Oregon is doing this at all. Why is Oregon participating in this?
One wonders. I don't know.
Well, perhaps Mr. Adams will answer that. Because I've wondered also what Oregon gets out of belonging other than the federal law sort of tells them they ought to. But
if they were to change the tax system, they would have to.
I can tell you that the Oregon website says the reason they do this is because their tracking companies want them to. But I don't know whether that's true.
Yeah, could be. But let me get back, because I do want to answer your question, but you're getting into the second argument. And the question in my mind is, I don't believe that argument is based on the language of the statute with respect to the word state.
Why?
Because it says plain, speedy, and effective and efficient remedy. Here we have a federal compact. It is actually federal law, of course. Also, it becomes state law when adopted by each state. It is one act providing for the collection at one source of all taxes.
So if you're worried about federal compact, the only possible remedy would be to go to Nebraska for Nebraska taxes. So you're no worse off. I mean, the only question is whether by passing this law, Congress somehow intended to undo the Tax Injunction Act.
I don't believe so, but Congress clearly intended that there be an efficient administration of the tax law,
but the agreement specifically says that you then have to go to all the 50 states to get the refunds, right?
The ALJ.
Isn't that in the agreement?
The agreement says that with respect to tax exempt fuel, and we contend this is not tax exempt fuel.
But at least Congress contemplated, I think Judge Berzon's point is, that Congress contemplated that at least in some circumstances there wasn't going to be any shortcut to going to each state.
No, Congress didn't say anything about that in 31701 at SEC. It didn't say that. That's the agreement. The agreement says that. There's nothing in the statute that says that we are required to go to each and every state. It just simply says that the states are authorized to enter into this compact.
Thought it did make reference to the Tax Injunction Act, though.
I completely missed it, Your Honor.
Be the agreement. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And I don't remember the agreement saying it either, but I could be wrong about that. But if I can get back to the point, the first argument that we make is that, in fact, the statute should be read to indicate that, and all the cases, by the way, all the cases that have been cited by both sides, in fact, that I think exist, specifically, they all involve an action by a taxpayer directed to the state, in which the district court sits, by the way, to enjoin taxes of that state.
This is a case of
personal precedent in that respect. There's never been a case that I've seen where you are directing your action to a state that has no interest, no taxes at all, but it's simply acting as a collector for other states.
What about the U.S. Steel case, which is probably your strongest case, but it still was a parallel case? It didn't have the feature that Oregon was
I'm sorry. You're absolutely right. Excuse me. But in that case, of course, in the district court, they essentially held, for the reasons that we've indicated, that there was no plain, speedy, and adequate remedy. Thank you very much. I have it written down here. So other than that case, this is the first case. And I concede that such an interpretation as Judge Graber has given is arguable. I take the other side, based particularly on the recent Wynn case.
Now, counsel, I did want to point out that it is 49 U.S. Code Section 31706C, which it is Congress that makes reference to the Tax Injunction Act by saying subject to Section 1341 of Title 28, the court shall issue certain injunctions and TROs, and that reference is to the Tax Injunction Act. So Congress at least had in mind the continued vitality of the Tax Injunction Act.
It did. I don't recall reading that, but I accept what you're saying. It certainly would be the case. But again, even the Tax Injunction Act would say it has to be a plain, speedy, and adequate remedy, efficient remedy.
It seems to summarize that you probably are in better shape on your second argument than your first. So to get to the second, I have a question. What, at a minimum, then, one, in order to, even if we assume that the Raskin, our hypothetical, is the focus, have you ever argued, or has anybody in this case ever determined, whether the 50 states to which you would have to go have plain, speedy, and efficient remedies?
Or you said, there's Alaska and Hawaii are not involved, but that was not an issue that was raised below or discussed in any length.
Meaning you did not raise it. You're not contesting that, as at least as to their own taxes. If you were a taxpayer in Nebraska trying to get money back from Nebraska or any others of the covered states, that they have plain, speedy, and efficient remedies.
The only thing that I would say is this, that insofar as they take the same position, and they seem to take the same position because they've all adopted IFTA, that only tax-exempt fuel is the subject of a refund, then there is no procedure under IFTA for taking the position that we're taking, which is that
that by the merits you can control whether the Tax Injunction Act, I mean, you're sort of saying, well, we're going to lose on the merits and therefore we don't have a remedy, but that isn't the focus of the statute, is it? Isn't it a procedural question, not a merits question? If you have a potential remedy but you have a loser of an argument, that doesn't mean you don't have a remedy, does it?
Answer
that question.
I disagree, and if I can explain that. I don't think you have a remedy if the remedy is limited to what they define as tax-exempt fuel.
That doesn't answer my question. I'm asking a more theoretical question.
Right.
If there is a procedure in place for a taxpayer in a state to ask for a remedy such as a refund, but the argument the taxpayer seeks to make is going to lose on the merits, does that mean it's not an adequate remedy under the Tax Injunction Act?
No, it does not.
Okay.
But the
What's
only remedy,
here?
Remember, IFTA is not only a federal compact, but it's adopted by the states and becomes state law. So under IFTA, you have to apply to whatever state in accordance with the terms of IFTA. And IFTA says that you apply for tax-exempt fuel refunds to the courts of those states. This is not taxes on fuel. As far as I know, there is nothing besides IFTA on the question that we're talking about, which is,
so your
is
argument
fuel
is, which is starting to come through now.
Sorry?
What's starting to come through now is that your argument is that the merits and the plain, speedy remedy question are essentially bound up together, because you would say that you cannot go to the state to make this argument, or if they can't, or that IFTA doesn't require you to. Which one?
IFTA doesn't even provide for going to the states to argue, that fuel not used for propulsion is not taxable. There's no provision for that. And in fact, the ALJ, and of course, ODOT's position before the ALJ, and the ALJ agreed, was you simply can't do it. In other words, there is no way, there is no procedure in Oregon or elsewhere for making the claim that it's not a taxable event when you're idling off the highway. There is no procedure in IFTA. Judge Graber, I have not gone and done a survey.
Was that their argument? Is their argument that this is a species of tax exemption, so there is a remedy? I remember the ALJ saying something like, I didn't understand what you were saying. I have a little bit of a hard problem understanding what you're saying, too, about why this is different than a tax exemption.
Because the statute, the agreement, I should say, the agreement provides that fuel shall be taxed if it's used for propulsion. And if it's used for idling, it's not used for propulsion. then the statute goes on to say that if there's tax exemption under a state for a particular kind of fuel, whether it's placed in the supply tank or not, then you go to the state mm-hmm. and ask for the refund directly. Mm-hmm. And their argument has been that we must be asking for an exemption. We're not. We're not. We have done a survey. We did, I think, mention, I can't remember if we did in this brief or not, but we did mention that the tax exemptions in states, for example, for fuel used in for refrigeration or something, that has nothing to do with this.
Are there any jurisdictions that have decided on the merits, the question of whether fuel used for idling counts as fuel used for propulsion or not?
Roll, I think we cited these cases. Roll is the one case that where that was addressed, and I think Highway Dispatch may have indirectly addressed
okay.
it. Based on state statutes where the evidence had not been sufficiently specific in Roll.
So some states have found it possible to reach the merits of this claim. How have they done so if there's no procedure for doing so, which seems to be your other argument?
Because I believe what happened in Roll, at least, was it was an appeal from a decision of the ALJ. That would be the only procedure I'm aware of. In other words, that you go through the base jurisdiction. In Roll, the base jurisdiction was Wisconsin. And you appeal from the ALJ's decision, as we're doing here in Oregon, in the Oregon appellate courts. But we're not subject to the ALJ's jurisdiction in any of these states. That's the point.
So is the problem...
Because we don't... We can't...
Now, again, I'm starting to understand more about this. Is the problem that because Oregon does not have its own tax of this kind, it does... Therefore, in the other states, will the other states deciding under their state law or under the law of other states? Are they deciding under IFTA or under their own law?
They should have been deciding under IFTA, but they decided under a state statute. They applied their own state statute.
Because I think it was were those instances in which the complaint was about money collected by the state, or was it a refund action under the provision that if you want a refund, you have to go to the state which is imposing the tax?
No, as I understand it, at least in Roll, and I think in the other case too, it was response to an assessment where the trucking company had not paid on idling fuel.
But
and
so that
the ALJ then brought, the ALJ then made a decision.
But why were they then applying state law? They would be applying the law of whatever state the assessment was representing, which wouldn't necessarily be their own state.
That was one of the points that I made in the brief, that they did apply state statutes, which was contrary to IFTA. Now, IFTA should prevail, but they went ahead and said, well, under our state statutes, we don't think this is...
But doesn't that suggest that there's another kind of... Well, it's never mind. It suggests to me that there is an ordinary remedy other than an injunctive remedy.
But here's what I wanted to ask you. In Wisconsin, that was the base jurisdiction for Roll. All right. So Roll withheld taxes, and they commenced an administrative proceeding. And when they lost, they appealed. In the state court system.
And you could have done that.
We're not subject. No, Wisconsin, Nebraska, none of those states are going to bring any kind of proceeding against us. It's Oregon that has jurisdiction over us.
Right. So specifically you can sue in Oregon state courts and you don't have a Tax Injunction Act that precludes district courts from doing something.
Well, we definitely are appealing the decision of the ALJ in Oregon. But the question is, will that decision be binding on any other state? Absolutely not.
Why not? By full faith and credit.
The full faith and credit clause, Your Honor, as I understand it, would not apply to a decision that's based on, particularly if other states say they're going to give their own interpretation and their own statutes.
So if you
do what they've done before,
let's say
just
you say
won
in Oregon on appeal, mm-hmm. and you get a judgment that says no tax for anything happening while your trucks are idling, mm-hmm. and you carry that around to the other 46, I guess, other states, however many there are. There'd be 47 other ones, the lower 48. That's why they call it that. Don't you think you'd get a refund if you had an Oregon court ruling that in your favor?
I don't know that, Your Honor, but I can tell you based on the cases that we've seen, they keep saying, well, we're not going to follow IFTA, we're going to follow our own state statutes, which I think is wrong.
My understanding of your argument is that you began by saying noting that the Tax Injunction Act refers to such state. And my response to that, which seems right to me, is that, yes, the state as to which, for which the tax is being collected. But then, if one is consistent about that, then the issue isn't whether Oregon has a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy. It's whether the state for which the tax is being collected has a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy.
But all our remedies have to go through Oregon, Jude. That's our administrative.
I'm actually trying to help you.
I know. Maybe I'm missing something.
Now I'm trying to understand whether, instead of looking at whether you could have gone through the administrative system in Oregon, we don't have to look to see what you could have done in any of these other states who are actually getting your taxes.
And there is no procedure for making this kind of claim. It's only for making for seeking a refund for taxes on fuel. They are not our administrator. We can't raise this issue.
Have you ever filed one of these cases to see what happens?
No, ma'am, I haven't.
Okay. We have used a lot of your time with questions, and we'll restore 2 minutes for rebuttal when the time comes.
Thank you. I'm sorry if I didn't respond directly.
That's okay. It's complicated issues. Mr. Adams?
May it please the Court, Counsel, to the extent the argument today has concerned the merits of the claim for a refund for fuel consumed while idling, I guess my preliminary observation would be this is why we moved to dismiss the case in federal court and why the district court dismissed it, because this case and these issues about how IFTA should apply really are questions that can and will be resolved in the state court action. And the other preliminary thing I would like to say, although counsel says he wants to focus on the Tax Injunction Act and he's briefed the other two, I think that, if this hasn't been said, let me say it, that this court could sustain the dismissal on any one of those three grounds.
How does the 11th Amendment help you much if the complaint can be amended to name an individual?
My answer to that would be that, as I understand it, naming an individual for prospective relief will get you out from under 11th Amendment immunity, and this case is about retrospective relief, in other words, a refund for past tax years. And so I don't believe that even, although Judge...
But the money is not Oregon money. Is that correct? Is there any Oregon money involved in this?
That's correct, but that does not actually go to whether the relief is retrospective or prospective.
Well, there is a strain of 11th Amendment ex parte Young cases that looks to whether or not the fisc of the state is involved, and the answer here is no.
Well, the fisc is involved.
This is a sovereign immunity claim. I mean, unlike the conversation we were having before about the Tax Injunction Act, which may be equally concerned with all the states, whether Oregon can... claim a sovereign immunity problem when there's no money involved, of its own money, may be a quite different question.
Well, money comes in and money goes out, and that is expensive. That costs the state money out of its budget to administer.
Why does Oregon do this and spend money on it?
That's a great question. I don't actually know why, but I think a better question actually would be why Oregon adheres to its very complicated weight mile system, which is the only state in the union to do so. And I think counsel was correct, is that, for whatever reason, Oregon has entered into this agreement and made it a part of state law, because at some point, if Oregon does abandon its weight tax system, it would probably go to this sort of prorating of fuel taxes. Okay. And by the way, every year or every session in Oregon, and including in initiative measures, we see very complicated revisions and proposals for revising the weight mile system.
But for present purposes, the point is that Oregon, for whatever reason, has chosen to spend some of its own money on this and get nothing back. And therefore, I don't see how we can be concerned about the fact that it's getting nothing back. It's a choice it's made. So for 11th Amendment purposes, it seems to me that the zero sum of this may matter. To go back to the Tax Injunction issue, however, it may matter less. Mm-hmm. And what I'd like you to address is what I finally understood to be the sort of sophisticated version of your opponent's argument, which does seem somewhat to wrap in the merits on the ground that, which isn't necessarily a problem if the two of them collapse into one logically. And it seems to be an argument that says you can't look at whether Oregon has a remedy because Oregon isn't, quote, such state. If we look at whether the other states have a remedy, he says, and this is what I need to evaluate, I don't know, he says the other states don't have a remedy because IFTA provides for a remedy for a tax exemption, but this isn't one.
I think that's a distinction that is too subtle for me. And in fact, that's we said that in our supplemental brief, actually, because IFTA itself, and it's a provision that we briefed in it to some extent in this case, and also we briefed it in the state case, says basically in R83-200, this is at App 10 of the opening brief, licensees, which is what Made Trucking is, must submit claims for refund for tax paid on tax-exempt fuel directly to the respective jurisdiction. They claim it's not a taxable event.
They say it's not tax-exempt fuel.
Well, but I guess, you know, I think this is perhaps the most
it's
important.
Either taxable or tax-exempt.
They're only two.
Yeah, you either tax it or you don't, and then whether you label it tax-exempt or non-taxable, it seems to me beside the point, because if...
So your position is there are only two things. If it's either taxable, in which case you couldn't ask for a refund because you agree it's
right.
taxable, or it's tax-exempt, in which case you can...
But what makes it tax-exempt and what makes it taxable, this is the key
point.
It's
a merits question.
Well, but it's key to this, the Tax Injunction Act. It is the law of the state that assesses and levies or imposes the fuel tax. Oregon does not assess or levy. Oregon collects. So that whether it's taxable or whether it's tax exempt is a question of Nebraska law, to use your example. And so what we presented to you in our supplemental brief, because we anticipated that this would come up, because it was actually, I think, their strongest argument, the actual wording of the Tax Injunction Act, the such state, we presented you with two scenarios. If May Trucking is correct, that they get to come to Oregon, scenario number one, and get a refund, then they have a plain, we contend, in Oregon, a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy in Oregon, because they are getting a remedy in the courts of the state that is collecting. And bear in mind that, and this is on page 8 of our supplemental memo, this is section 1341 of the Tax Injunction Act, it refers to district courts not enjoining, suspending, or restraining the assessment, levy, or collection. So it's in the disjunctive, and so therefore if Oregon collects, and there's a remedy in Oregon, if May Trucking is correct that they get to have a refund in Oregon, then the Tax Injunction Act covers that scenario. If we are correct in our on the merits and the interpretation of IFTA that it requires you to go to Nebraska because it's whether it's taxable or tax-exempt is a question of Nebraska law, then the remedy is in such state that is assessing or levying the taxes. So whether under either scenario, the tax, the actual literal
but if you
wording
do it
applies.
The first way. The interesting thing is the collection of any tax, and you talk about Oregon, then you might arguably run into Hibbs because Oregon has no fiscal interest in it. If they also, in other words, if we're dealing with a refund here, I understand refunds in general are covered, but here you're asking for money from Oregon, which is not, for money which is not going to come from Oregon. And to the degree that Hibbs suggests that the Tax Injunction Act is ultimately about the fisc of the state, it isn't, right?
Well, it is. If the money comes in, the money goes out, it takes money to administer. It does affect the fisc of the state.
Well, the administrator runs the other direction. I mean, again, this is where it began with. If Oregon chose to spend that money, that's their problem. But they're not going to get more or less money.
They're not going to get more money. It certainly Oregon doesn't.
They're not going to get less either.
As in Hibbs, in other words, money was.
But they're not going to get less either. It's going to be zero.
Other than their administrator.
Right now, is the money that the appellant wants a refund on, is that in a bank account under the state of Oregon's name?
I do not know the answer to that question. I know that Oregon assessed in its role as collector, basically filed something that might be called assessment and said, pay this. I don't actually know.
To the extent it was paid, what happens to it? Like, doesn't it have to be deposited in some type of financial institution for the state of Oregon, and then ultimately it would be transmitted to other states, but it's got to come to rest first in Oregon. I mean, they can't.
That's the whole point of having one assessment.
They're not going to carry a bunch of cash or checks and tear them up into 47 pieces.
No, I'm sure there's a fund, and it's in some institution
somewhere
in Oregon.
So if there's a fund, whether there's been a disbursement from it or not, at some point there's a fund into which all these funds are put, the collected taxes. And if the appellant gets a remedy, probably the appellant can get a remedy against the state of Oregon, which had possession of those funds, whether they're still there or whether they've been dispersed. So it strikes me that it's not hard for you to argue it has an effect on the fisc of the state. It doesn't really matter if someone else is standing behind the state. It's like a kick in the state's shin. The state has to respond to it.
Well, you're quickly plumbing the depths of my ignorance about how the system actually works. But I guess if
the Oregon Department of Transportation doesn't know how the system works, it's going to be difficult for us to understand.
Well, I'm sure the Oregon Department of Transportation knows better than I do. I just said today, as I stand before you, I don't know some of the details about how the funds, but I do believe that this is affecting the fisc in the sense that money is coming in.
So you don't know, for example, whether the money from the 1998 and 1999 years that are still being litigated about is sitting in an Oregon bank account or has already been dispersed to the state.
I do not know the answer to that. I apologize.
Well, if in the state, let's say that the state proceeding is successful on behalf of Mr. Carey's client, and there's a judgment of a state court, ultimately, that says, pay them back. Wouldn't Oregon be responsible for having wrongly dispersed that money to pay it back and then go scrambling around to try to get it from the various other states?
Certainly, Oregon would be bound, it would seem, by an Oregon determination. But, you know, here's the thing. The ALJ did point out in the order that by signing on to IFTA, Oregon did not agree to collect, and every state that is a base jurisdiction agrees to collect. Oregon did not agree to administer the tax laws of other jurisdictions. And I found that actually very persuasive. It's in the ALJ order that's in the excerpt of record in the opening brief. I found very persuasive that that's kind of the trade-off, that IFTA is really a limited compact, and that Oregon did not agree to have to, and nor do the other states, like Nebraska, want Oregon to be deciding whether tax its fuel, Nebraska's fuel tax, while idling, doesn't cover it. That's not the role. That's not Oregon's role.
Which takes you back to saying that they have to go to each state.
And whether that's efficient or speedy, when you think of the fact that Oregon is not administering the tax laws of each and of the other jurisdiction, nor do the other jurisdictions necessarily want Oregon to be arbitrating their tax laws and their tax exemptions, it may actually be more efficient or speedy for May trucking to go to those jurisdictions.
This is just such an amazingly complicated thing. What if I assume all the different states have different tax rates, right? Not that they have the same rates. And there could be disputes about what the rate of the fuel tax is.
That sounds like a reasonable assumption.
Okay. So suppose somebody comes into Oregon and says, you know, I've been assessed X amount per gallon in New York, but it really should have been assessed Y. Then where does that complaint go? Does Oregon decide that, or do they say go bother New York? That's not about exemption, right? That's a rate issue. Where does it go? We don't know.
I don't know, number one. And number two, I think Oregon has to accept at face value the rates set by a state and apply whatever rate it is given from the other jurisdiction.
But either way, it's not a federal question. I think that's the point you're making.
Yes.
It's either Oregon or it's New York, but it's not a federal court.
Correct. I think IFTA is a limited compact, which for ease of avoiding ripping up a check, as Judge Gould mentioned, into 47 pieces, allows a base jurisdiction to collect and disperse according pro rata, according to what the state's rates are. But it doesn't get to make the decisions about the rates. It doesn't get to make the decision about what's tax exempt or what's taxable.
But it does something when it assesses the taxes. It's now you're now having an administrative procedure about the audit, right?
It doesn't actually, in the sense of the Tax Injunction Act, we would say it doesn't really assess or levy, in the sense of impose them. It collects them. And it may be, as a nomenclature thing, it may be that there's a piece of paper that is an assessment that Oregon sends out, but it's an assessment really on behalf of the respective jurisdictions.
So your position is essentially that the taxpayer, for the purpose of the Tax Injunction Act, is in the same position with or without a compact. there's still no federal claim. If you're trying to restrain a tax, it doesn't matter whether there's a compact or no compact. You don't come to federal court.
That's essentially correct. That's correct. And
to find otherwise, we would have to find somehow that IFTA intends to somehow lessen the effect of the Tax Injunction Act.
Which would be hard to find when the implementing authorizing congressional legislation refers to, incorporates by reference, subject to the Tax Injunction Act. It appears that Congress intended to continue the Tax Injunction Act rather than to abrogate it. Unless the court has any questions on and anything else, I just would add, although we have not discussed younger abstention, and I realize that the circuit in an en banc decision has spoken about younger abstention recently in the Gilbertson case, of which nobody has cited, but I just wanted to add that there has been some question in this case about what Oregon's state interest is, and we would say, and some of the similar things I've been saying, that its interest, it does have an obligation for whatever reason it entered into the compact, it made it state law.
It is very hard to figure out what its interest is.
But once having done so, it has an obligation to the other jurisdictions, and its interest is in not increasing its administrative burden and in yet meeting its obligations under IFTA that it has agreed to participate in. And that is its interest in staying in Oregon law.
Isn't its position going to increase its administrative burden? In other words, it's saying that each of these things has to go through individual Oregon ALJ enforcement for decisions. So it's certainly not lessening its administrative burden. I do have a very hard time seeing what the Oregon interest is, and I think the Edgar is a hard one for that reason.
But by sending May Trucking to the respective jurisdictions, then it's out of Oregon. That's one of Oregon's interests in this case, is to not have to administer the tax laws of 47 other jurisdictions, including this request, which every other appellate court, as the ALJ pointed out, has rejected the claim.
But your argument is that it ought to go forward in a state proceeding for younger purposes. That's why the younger argument is much weaker than
we believe we will win in the state proceeding, and it's just...
I know, but your younger argument hinges on there being a state proceeding. So to say that there's a state interest in not having a state proceeding is not a very strong argument, because you want to stay in the state proceeding. That's what you want to do.
Well, we want to affirm dismissal of this case. This case, we're saying that this court should not be, the federal court should not become involved, because there, for abstention purposes, Oregon has an interest in resolving this in the way that Oregon interprets its own law, which is IFTA, and that's Oregon's interest.
You probably hope that in the state proceeding, you ultimately get a ruling that says Oregon's just collecting this. If you want a refund, go to the other states, leave Oregon alone.
Well, that's the ruling we're seeking.
That's what you want.
That's our interest in the Oregon case.
You know,
and our interest in this case is in having you affirm the dismissal of the district court on any one of those three grounds.
Yeah. But am I correct that we wouldn't reach, if we conclude, I'm not sure to certainty how the Tax Injunction Act works here with this novel situation that we've got. But if we conclude that the Tax Injunction Act applies, then do we reach that issue ahead of Younger so that we don't have jurisdiction and we never have to address Younger? Or is Younger on kind of equal footing jurisdictionally so that we should address that first? Now, which issue do we address first?
I think you should address the issue first that you believe the strongest that would support dismissal, and then go with that. And
that's
as a matter of law.
I don't know which would take precedence between the Tax Injunction Act.
Well, after Gilbertson, wouldn't since this is a refund action, wouldn't the result be not to dismiss the case if we were to do Younger, and therefore isn't the Tax Injunction Act prior?
It's a good question. It's not actually an action for damages, though. It's an equitable request.
But still, Younger abstention.
Younger
abstention assumes that at some way, at some future time, a federal court could have jurisdiction.
Right.
So wouldn't the subject matter jurisdiction, the Tax Injunction Act, logically be the first one? If federal courts can't be in this business whatsoever, isn't that logically the first issue?
Yes.
And perhaps the 11th Amendment second, which is, well, maybe you have an action, but not against them. And then Younger would sort of seem to come third of, well, maybe we ought to wait.
Principles of comity, yes. That hierarchy appears correct to me. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We're giving you a couple of minutes for rebuttal since we took a lot of your time with questions.
May I have 30 seconds to address this 2 a.m. realization that's been prompted by Judge Berzon? I always seem to realize that I didn't frame the issue very well.
You'll think of the best argument tomorrow at 2 a.m. That's
no. It drives me crazy. If you just give me 30 seconds, I want to say this. I can supply you, if you would like, with examples of statutes in all these jurisdictions, other than Oregon, because it doesn't matter, or Oregon, that define tax-exempt fuel. It's various examples. The one that really pops into my mind first is fuel put in the tank of a refrigerated trailer to run the refrigeration unit. There's others. But that's the kind of thing. Okay, so here's the deal. Yes, we can go to Nebraska and ask them for a refund of fuel that we put in our refrigeration trailer unit tank. But in order to make the argument that we're making, that is, that the fuel used while idling is not used for propulsion and is not taxable in the first instance, we have to do that in front of our base administrator. That's the only opportunity we have. Nebraska is not going to bring an action against us.
How do you know that? How do you know that if you brought a suit for declaratory judgment in Nebraska, that you couldn't frame a complaint that said, to the extent Nebraska has an interest in taxes collected by Oregon under this compact, those taxes that Nebraska's entitled to don't reach fuel we use while we're idling because that's not covered by your statute? How do you know you couldn't do that?
Well, I don't know absolutely, but I can anticipate the response,
so this brings up another question. Under the Tax Injunction Act in general, don't you at least have once try a remedy before you even say that it isn't plain, speedy, and efficient? I mean, here we have a sort of discrete legal issue. Whether or not the states are going to entertain this kind of a suit as being one for tax exempt, and you've never tried it. So how do we know it's not a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy?
Because, well, as a matter of common sense, it's not a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy of 47 states. But if I can also...
I don't know if you can just zing that one by.
But I wanted to respond to this. Okay, but that also responds to Judge Bergeron, is that IFTA itself indicates that we have to deal with the base administrator. So if we file the case in Nebraska, the court's likely to move to dismiss because they're going to say this is not the appropriate thing.
I don't see how that helps you, because if it's the job of Oregon, you have a remedy in Oregon, you're pursuing it. If it's the job of Nebraska, there is a remedy there that you haven't pursued, but I don't see how it helps you to say if it's the administrating state's job, you go to the administrating state and there is a remedy because you're using it. We know that there is one. If it's the job of the other 47 states, then we look to see if you can file a claim there.
Your Honor,
But I don't see how it helps you to say that it's all in Oregon, because that seems to even weaken your case because you're already pursuing a remedy in Oregon.
Counsel and ODOT and the ALJ have already said that they won't address this claim, that we have to go to the other states.
Am I wrong to, and this is just recollection, not anything I've looked at for this case, but I believe that in order to claim that there's not a plain, speedy, and efficient remedy for purposes of the Tax Injunction Act, you have to be able to point to something that, like, it's been tried and it didn't work. You just come in here and ask us to guess what Nebraska would do with this?
Well, I'm not asking that. I'm saying that the Act itself says we have to go through Oregon. That's what I'm saying. And that
Oregon says no.
Right. And that's what they say. So
you were saying that if you go through Oregon and you win, that then you're worried that Nebraska and all these other states will just say, so what? And blow you away and
absolutely.
They're not going to follow.
Absolutely.
Well, couldn't you go into court in those other states and get a ruling then? I mean, that's what you don't really know. You haven't. I understand why you would like us to entertain this, and so you don't have to be in 48 states. But
I do.
But if you're wrong in your theory of what's a plain, speedy, you know, effective
efficient
remedy,
yeah,
efficient remedy, you know, if that doesn't, if theory doesn't work.
If I'm wrong,
if you're wrong, if you're wrong just by on the numbers,
yeah,
then it seems to me that probably you have to show that you can't go to court in each of these other states,
if,
and get an effective ruling.
I think you may be right, if I'm wrong, Your Honor. But I think plain, speedy, and efficient means something.
Okay.
And one other thing, on the declaratory on the 11th Amendment, even if the refund is out, we ask for declaratory relief at a future date. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Sorry about the
the case just argued is submitted, and we appreciate the very interesting arguments on both parties.